Shalom Aleichem, Assalam Aleichem, Namaste, Pak Satnam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Ho Lila Tanyan Wasayaki. Hello, may everything be well with you as it is with me. I turned down the recording level just a little here. It's redlining out too much. There, I hope that's still loud enough that you can hear me. And now before we begin today's class, I will do as I do every time and recite the Kaddish for the dead and for the mourners of the dead. Please close your eyes as you listen and remember, call into your memory someone to whom you are close who has died. In doing so, you'll honor that person's life and you'll bless his or her memory with the light of your own consciousness. Yishkadal v'yishkadash meirabo, bo modi v'ero kirase, v'yamlik melkase, mekaya kon uvyo makon, uvkaye dekol beis Yisrael, ba'agalo uvizman koriev ve'imru omein. Yehe shmeirabo mevorak, le'olam le'olmei omayo, Yisparak v'yistavak, v'yisparar v'yisromam, v'yisnase v'yisadar, v'yisale, Veis halal, shmeidukacho bereku, leolo, minkol berkaso, veisharoso, tushbekoso, venekamoso, da amiron beolmo, veimru omein. Yehe shloma rebo min shemayo, vekayim olenu, veyalkol Yisrael, veimru omein. Ose shalom bimromov, Huyashe shalom olenu ve'al kol Yisrael ve'imru amen. Thank you very much. Now, we've been talking for 2 months now about Torah. And I thought, as of yesterday, that I pretty much finished the subject for now. And, of course, I'm not talking, when I say we've been talking about discussing learning about Torah, I'm not talking about learning out of the Torah. Learning out of the Torah is the source of all of our learning. Okay? Except for that's directly revealed in the form of prophecy, which is very rare these days. Okay? But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the learning where we analyze verses and discuss them and learn out of the Torah. Because that is truly infinite. Now, what I'm talking about when I say that we've been learning for the last 2 months about Torah is I'm talking about the nature of Torah, its origins, its definitions, what its function in the world is, what its relationship to God is, what its relationship to man is. Things of this nature, the types of Torah that there are, the many different types. Okay, so we've been on that subject now for 2 months. And I thought, as of our last meeting, that I had exhausted what I wanted to teach on about that. But then the Holy Spirit determined otherwise in a synchronistic event, as is usually how the Holy Spirit reveals these things. When I opened up my thousand plus page volume, this great work by Gershom Scholem titled Sabbatai Sevi, The Mystical Messiah. And of course, you know, our church has the name Sabbatai in it, Universal Sabbatean Church. Okay, so obviously what we're doing is based somehow upon Sabbateanism, upon the life and messiahship of that 17th century avatar messiah, we would maintain, Messiah ben Joseph, if nothing else, Messiah of the house of Joseph, as opposed to Messiah of the house of David, who lived in the mid 17th century in the Levant named Shabtai Zvi. The only person, individual, being ever to be recognized by the entirety of the Jewish world. Now think about that. As the Messiah. When Shabtai Zvi lived, in his lifetime, he was recognized and accepted as by the entire Jewish world. All the way from Amsterdam, all the way to Yemen, all the way to Baghdad, and up into Europe, Eastern Europe, Northern Africa, Egypt, Spain. Wherever there were Jews, virtually their entirety, the whole of them, the entire Klal Yisrael, community of Israel, accepted during his lifetime that this man, Shabtai Zvi, was the Messiah. Of course, that didn't last very long, and I'm not going to go into that right now, but his life is such a remarkable thing, and had such an impact on Judaism, and mystical Judaism especially, that Gershom Scholem, the father of modern Kabbalah scholarship, devoted an entire book totaling, well, let me open it up here, wow, 1,000 pages even, a 1,000-page book, devoted to a serious examination of his life, his teachings, his actions, and its impact upon Judaism and Jewish culture and Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism other than Kabbalah. And this was published as a part of the Bollingen or Bollingen series by Princeton University in 1973. And I would highly recommend it. Again, that is Shabtai Zvi, The Mystical Messiah by Gershom Scholem. It's available off of Amazon. And I'm sure you can find used copies through Abe Books or other used bookstores like Powell Bookstore in Portland, Oregon, which also has an online site. Okay, now having said that, I said earlier that I thought that I had pretty much exhausted this topic of about the Torah. Okay, not what we learn from the Torah, but about the Torah and its nature. Until I had happened to pick up my copy of Shabtai Zvi, The Mystical Messiah, and open it up to page 319, and there see some writing about the Torah. And and let me just see, I'm looking right now to see if I can find the passage that caught my eye. Yes, here it is. This is on page 319. Okay, in which in chapter 3, in which Scholem is discussing the Sabbatean movement in Palestine. And he says here, he is speaking of the Sabbateans. He says, it is difficult to imagine Kabbalists more devoted to the traditional law than Moses Cordovero and his school. Now, that's not about the Sabbateans. That's about Moses Cordovero and his school. He was a predecessor in Safed to Isaac Luria. In fact, he was Isaac Luria's teacher when Isaac Luria first arrived in the 1600s in Safed. And so he's talking about Moses Cordovero here, Scholem is, and he goes on to say, yet this is what his disciple, Moses Cordovero's disciple, Elijah de Vidas, quotes Cordovero as saying, quote, every commandment is, in the higher world, a supernal light, united to the tree of life. But as a result of Adam's sin, and again of the sin of the golden calf, the Torah and the commandments materialized, and hence men must now perform material, that is, practical commandments, such as wearing a four-cornered garment with fringes or tefillin made of leather and the like. And my master, meaning Moses Cordovero, has treated this subject on many occasions, end quote. Now, I saw that, and now we're going to do some more teaching about the Torah. We're going to teach about today, hopefully, about how the nature and the form of the Torah that we have with us today is different from the Torah that existed at the time of Adam in Gan Eden. Okay? And that's what we're going to talk about today, about how the Torah was once totally spiritual, and we talked about that before, we call it the Torah de Atzilut, okay? But is now material, Torah de Berea. But I've talked about that before, how the first Torah was taken back because of the sin of the golden calf and was replaced with the Torah de Berea, the Torah of the remaking of the covenant. And I've talked about that. But I haven't emphasized how it was a changed Torah from spiritual to material. The Torah itself was changed. Okay? There is a Kabbalistic saying that expresses a fundamental relationship between the upper and the lower worlds. And that saying is this: as above, so below, and as below, so above. This is the principle known as doubling. Doubling. And it reflects the Kabbalistic principle, or truth, or teaching, that man's actions here on earth have a direct or indirect, but nevertheless have an effect on the supernal worlds. This is because the channels that connect the upper and the lower worlds and transmit light and influences downward from above, from the upper worlds, those channels that transmit God's supernal light and influences from above down to here below, and thus sustain and maintain this universe and our existences, also transmit light and influences upward from below to above. In some cases, that what is was transmitted back up is the light that's reflected, that came from above and is reflected off of us back up. But it's changed by our actions. And also, our actions have influences that are transmitted through those channels back up. So therefore, not only does what God do affect us in this world here below, but what we do has a direct effect on the supernal worlds and an indirect effect on God itself. Okay, so now what I want to do is discuss, given that truth, that spiritual truth, or we'll just say axiom, okay, it's axiomatic that that's the case. So we'll lay that out as an axiom, okay? So given that axiom of doubling, I want to now discuss how Adam's original sin in Gan Eden, okay, and we'll discuss this in detail here, has impacted and changed the form of the Torah, and how the Messiah will rectify that sin and restore the Torah to its former spiritual state. All right. Let me get a little drink of water for my throat. Actually, some good red tea. Red rose, to be specific, which I really like if it's decaffeinated. with the caffeine, I get too nervous, too wired up. I'm that way enough already without the added caffeine. Okay, so let's get started on this discussion. First of all, you all remember from the story of the Garden of Eden, the story that there were two trees in this garden. Well, and actually, if you read closely, there were many trees because all of the plants and all of the animals were made there and existed there along with man and along with God, who walked in the cool of the afternoon through the garden and communed with Adam and Eve. Okay, so there were many trees, but there are two trees only that we're concerned with here. These are the ones in which God gave one of which he gave a specific prohibition to Adam. And that's the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And the other is mentioned just a little bit later, and that's the tree of life. And what I'm telling you now is that there are two forms of the Torah, that are each of which is associated with one of those trees. Okay? So there's a Torah associated with and having the form connected with the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and there will be one day, is not now, but will be one day, a Torah associated with the tree of life. All right. Now, let's talk a little bit about this tree of knowledge of good and evil. I'm going to read now from Genesis 2, verses 16 and 17. Then Yahweh God gave the man this command: you are free to eat of all the trees in the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you are not to eat. For the day you eat of that, you are doomed to die. So there's God's explicit direction to Adam. You can eat of anything you want in this garden, except for one tree. You can eat of the fruit of any tree in this garden, except for one tree. And that tree is the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And why shouldn't you eat that? Because on that day that you eat that, you will be doomed to die. Now, it doesn't say you'll die on that day, but it says that on that day you will be doomed to die. That's Genesis 2, verses 16 and 17. Okay, knowledge of good and evil. So if you eat that fruit, you acquire knowledge of good and evil, implying that Adam and Eve did not have this knowledge before they ate of this tree. But the knowledge that one acquires is not just a good and evil. That's sort of the heading. It's more than this. It's the knowledge of life and death, light and darkness, loving kindness and hard-heartedness, indeed, all the opposites that exist in the universe, that exist in our world, that exist in the supernal worlds. Eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil causes in one who eats of that fruit an awareness of the conflict of the opposites in being. So, in a way, what we can say is this is another name for this tree is the tree of consciousness. Okay, and what do I have to back me up on that? This isn't just my conclusion. There's actually scripture that we can use to give evidence of that. A little bit later in Genesis 3, verses 6 and 7, we find, so she took some of its fruit, this is of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and ate it. She also gave some to her husband, who was with her, and he ate it. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized that they were naked. So they ate the fruit, and it says, then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized they were naked. Two things here to look at. First of all, the phrase, the eyes of both of them were opened. What does this mean? It means they were blind before? No, they could see. They could walk around, they could see. What it means is that they acquired self-consciousness, self-awareness, awareness of the self with a capital S. Okay? Awareness of the spiritual order behind reality, that means God. Yes, they knew God before, but they didn't understand the hierarchical relationship of all of their environment and all the things in their environment, including themselves. So they became, when they ate of this fruit, and of course I don't believe there is a physical fruit. These people who said, oh, you picked an apple and gave it to Adam, and they ate the apple, and that's the apple tree, and it's just, wake up. Come on, folks, wake up. This is all metaphysical. This is all metaphorical. Okay? What it means is that they acquired self-consciousness, self-awareness, and they acquired an understanding for the first time. They reached a level of consciousness, okay, in which they became aware of the spiritual order of the cosmos, of reality, and their place in it. Okay, now, as to, it says, their eyes were opened, and they realized that they were naked. Realize that they were naked isn't about having shame over the exposure of their genitals to each other. It has nothing to do with that. This isn't a moral, sexual thing. Okay? I know it says that they put on loincloths to cover their nakedness. But it isn't about shame over their genitals. The nakedness it's referred to, that is being mentioned here, is a reference to their spiritual bodies. Their bodies that had no skin. That's right. This place, Gan Eden, is a spiritual place. If you look on your diagram of the 10 holy sephirot, you will see the first three. And that is Keter, Chokmah, Binah. These first three are taken as a group and are called the world or realm of Atzilut. That is the world of emanation, or I like this interpretation of Atzilut even better, nearness, the world of nearness, meaning it's the highest world, the nearest to Ein Sof, to the transcendent, eternal God, an unknowable God. Okay, so this is Gan Eden. We could also call the world of Atzilut the world of Gan Eden, or just call it Gan Eden. This is the world where everything is spiritual. There is no physical world at this point. It has not come into existence yet. It does not come into existence until the creation of the next six sephirot. In fact, what do we call the next three? We call the next three Berea, creation. Okay? Hesed, Gevurah, and Tiferet. And there's an overlap here. So I'm kind of making this simplistic because it overlaps into the world of Yetzirah, the world of formation. Okay? And then there's the world of Atzilut, or not Atzilut, the world of making or action, called the world of Asiya, at the very bottom where Malkut is. But what I want you to understand is that at the time Adam and Eve existed, there were no physical bodies. These were not physical bodies. They were not physical people before eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. The only world that existed at that time was the world of emanation. It was a totally 100% spiritual world. There were no physical bodies, no physical plants, no physical animals. Everything was totally spiritual, meaning that we cannot comprehend that world. Okay? Because when I say spiritual, I don't mean that the world was like a dream world. I can imagine what it looked like. You know, and I can be there in my mind. It's imaginary. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about something that we cannot experience and we have no way to define or describe because none of us have ever been totally spiritual. Our souls, granted, are spiritual. But we have no memory in this brain of ours. We have no images that because of a veil that is drawn across and exists between our, actually an image called a tzelem, okay, it's like an envelope that surrounds the soul, that is a buffer and a barrier between the divine soul that inhabits our bodies, which is really us, and our bodies isn't us. I am not this body, many of the Eastern gurus always say. Okay? I am is in the soul, not in the mind. Okay? So we cannot conceive of what that soul has experienced in the divine realm, in the spiritual realm, because of the zelem, which insulates us from having any knowledge of that passed on to us, other than just intellectual suppositions and deductions. Okay, so now, having said that, this is the world that Adam and Eve were in. Okay, and when they became aware, when they ate of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, they became aware not only of the conflicts of the opposites that exist in being, good, evil, light, dark, life, death, all those things. They became, their eyes were opened, meaning they acquired self-awareness, and they saw, meaning they realized, in fact, the word in the New Jerusalem Bible, the translation uses realized that they had no physical bodies. They were naked. Their essences had no physical clothing, no garment. Okay, now, we go on to Genesis 3:21, and we're told, Yahweh God made tunics of skins for the man and his wife and clothed them. This means that God covered Adam and Eve's spiritual essences, their spiritual bodies, with physical bodies. Notice how we're seeing here a repeat of what happens as each person comes into the world. Our soul comes down and is clothed with the body of our fetus. And then we are born. Okay? So God made tunics of skins. That doesn't mean animal skins. That means He gave them physical, He gave them skins of human beings. He put their souls into a physical body and thereby clothed them. Genesis 3:21. Okay? Now that that's happened, what happens? Then Yahweh, this is Genesis 3:23. Actually, Genesis 3:22 to 3:23. Let me just make a quick note here. Okay. And here's what it says. Then Yahweh God said, and this is Yahweh speaking, Yod-Heh Vov-Heh Elohim, saying these words, Now that the man has become like one of us in knowing good from evil, he must not be allowed to reach out his hand and pick from the tree of life too, and eat and live forever. So Yahweh God expelled him from the Garden of Eden to till the soil from which he had been taken. That's Genesis 3:22, verses 22 and 23. So this is the fall that we're talking about, the original sin and the fall. Okay, like Icarus, you all remember the story of Daedalus and Icarus, the two Greeks that Daedalus built wings strapped on their backs with bird feathers glued on with beeswax, and they flew up in the sky, but Icarus, the young man, ventured too close to the sun, and the wax melted, the feathers came out, and he fell from the sky to his death in the sea. Well, like Icarus, Adam and Eve have in this story come too close to God. And when you come too close to the fire, you get burned. That's another saying, okay? Well, they've come too close to God. In fact, that's what he says. He says, now that man has become like one of us, in knowing good and evil, he must not be allowed to reach out his hand and pick from the tree of life too, and eat and live forever. Now, it was okay, presumably, for them to eat of the tree of life before, because God said, of all the trees in here, you may eat of the fruit, except for one, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So that means that it was okay for them to eat of the tree of life and have immortality, to become eternal beings. Why? Because they were already going to be in that place anyway, because they were in Gan Eden, which is a totally spiritual place. There is no life or death in that place. That is what is to come in creation when the physical material world is created, because time doesn't exist before the creation of the world either. Scientists tell that at the instant of the Big Bang, not only does does space and matter come into existence, but also time. And here's a nice little paradox. Before the Big Bang, there was neither space, matter, nor time. So before the beginning of time, there was no time. But then how could there be a before? Okay, this is just, many of these little paradoxes around. And that's why we move into metaphysics to deal with those things. Okay, so God banished them from the Garden of Eden. Now, was this really a punishment, or is this just a natural progression of what happens here? They were no longer suited to be physical beings, so they acquired coverings, material forms to cover their essences. Okay, still in all, whether you accept that God's banishment was a punishment, or whether it was a natural consequence of a change in these two beings, Adam and Eve's states of consciousness, I don't think it makes any real difference here, for our purposes at least. It doesn't make any difference. But the fact of the matter is here, is they have come too close to God. They've become very much like God. And now, knowing good and evil, God cannot tolerate their presence, because they will also now become immortal, or be immortal, or have already been immortal. And therefore, they're going to have the ability to discriminate against the opposites. Between the opposites. Let me put it that way. Discriminate between the opposites. They will know the difference between life and death. The difference between good and evil. And God does not want them. This is an incredible power. God does not want them to have a power that is essentially divine in nature, that he has reserved for himself, and also have immortality. Therefore, as he said when he gave them the explicit commandment, thou shalt not eat of this tree, for on that day you shall be doomed to die. Okay? So what he did was he made them mortal. Or they became mortal, however you want to look at it. They took on a finite lifespan. Okay? Now, I started out this little discussion of this part here by comparing them to Icarus, who fell from the sky for flying too close to the sun. The Greeks have a name for this, and it's called katabasis. It means fall. And in this case, what this is a fall from grace. Okay? They're banished from Gan Eden, the spiritual world of atzilut, or nearness. Nearness to what? Nearness to God. To the material, physical world of Malkut. Okay, where if you look on your diagram of the 10 Holy Sephirot, the Tree of Life, that's Kayim, and you look where they were at, they existed in the realm of Atzilut, the top three up there, in nearness to the king, Keter. Okay, and they were banished, quite literally driven out of the king's palace. They were part of the king's court. But they were driven out of the king's palace, the realm of Atzilut, into the wilderness of the kingdom. All the way down, they fell all the way down to Malkut. And actually, the world that we live in is not in Malkut. It is generated from Malkut. It's even below Malkut, the kingdom. Okay? To do what? To live the difficult lives of peasants. They now have to struggle with the earth, scraping, planting seeds, pulling weeds, watering, hauling water, fighting off insects that would destroy their crops, all of these things, fighting off wolves that take their livestock, wild animals taking their own children for their food. They didn't have to deal with any of that when they were immortal, when they lived in Gan Eden, the world of the spirit. Okay, now, that's the story, okay? That is, and when I say story, I don't mean it's a fiction, okay? It's a metaphor for a metaphysical reality. Okay, now, a mystical reality. Now, what has this got to do with the Torah? I had mentioned before the principle of doubling. As above, so below, so above, okay? Okay, now, considering that principle of doubling, how did the fall of Adam and Eve, the fall of mankind, from spiritual to a material existence that we just described, affect the Torah? Okay, here's how. Okay, keeping in mind your diagram, and at hand, your diagram of the Ten Sefirot. When Adam and Eve were spiritual beings only, did not yet have bodies, were still immortal, so too was the Torah spiritual. It was Torah de Atzilut. Makes sense. Adam and Eve are in the realm of Atzilut. The Torah is in the realm of Atzilut. Specifically, what we're talking about here is the Torah Kaduma, the primordial Torah, the Torah associated with Sefirah Hakma, the supernal wisdom. This is the Torah that pre-existed the creation of the world. How do we know? How's that depicted by, as shown in the ten, diagram of the Ten Sefirot? Remember, the world is not created until the seven Sefirot below the first three, the top three, are made. The first six are the 6 days of creation and reflect Zer Anpin, the Son of God, and the bottom one is Malkut, meaning kingdom, but it's also Shekinah, Zer Nukva, the daughter, okay, of God. The feminine small face, literally. All right, so when Adam and Eve, so we had this primordial Torah that suited and was a match to, consistent with the psycho-spiritual state of Adam and Eve, the first man and woman, the prototypes of humankind. Okay, when Adam and Eve ate of, and I'm going to put that in quotes, ate of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, what they were actually doing, what it means is they were acquiring the characteristics and attributes of the tree of knowledge. That is, they fell to a lower state of being consciousness. Okay? There's two trees in the garden that are of importance here. The tree of life, that's the tree that God says is mine alone. You have to leave now. Although if they hadn't eaten of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, they could have stayed. Okay? He would have let them be immortal too. But once they ate of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, they had to leave. So we had those two trees there. The one is inferior to the other. The tree of knowledge of good and evil, although it's a high state of consciousness, okay, indeed, only humans out of all the creations have the knowledge, have knowledge of these things, knowledge of the opposites. Okay? It is not as high as the tree of life. The tree of life represents the essence of pure being. And there's only one essence or substance, if you want to speak in terms, philosophical terms, one substance in existence. That is God, who has infinite qualities and attributes, all of which have as their expression eternal being. Okay? That's God. Nothing else has it. We have the second best thing, which is the knowledge of good and evil. Not just good and evil, all of the opposites. Okay, so when they took on the essence of the tree of knowledge, they could no longer keep in them the higher essence. It drove out the higher essence. The lower essence drove out the higher essence. Or if you want to look at it, the higher essence shrank away from the lower essence. Okay? Meaning that they then fell to a lower state of being consciousness. They fell from spiritual to physical being. They acquired in their own natures what Carl Jung termed the conjunctio oppositorum. That's a conflict of opposites. Okay? Because all opposites are in conflict. That's part of the terror of it all that you've heard me speaking about so many times recently. And what do I mean when I say that they acquired in their own natures the conflict of the opposites? Well, we've learned here in past weeks that in every human being, God has placed in conflict the upward striving divine immortal soul, which is bound to the mortal physical body that seeks always to return to the earth. So the soul is always striving upward to the spiritual, and the body is always seeking to strive downward to return to the lower realms, to the earth, okay, to the state of non-livingness. The soul is striving toward the state of life, the body is striving to the state of non-life. Being versus non-being. Okay? In addition, God has placed in every human being two inclinations. The Yetzer HaTov, the inclination to do good, which is in conflict all the time with the Yetzer Hara, the inclination to do evil. So, this is what Adam and Eve acquired when they ate of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Okay, now, the Torah, at the same time, fell from its spiritual state, being the Torah de Atzilut, specifically the Torah Kedum, the primordial Torah. Okay, and it took on a material form. Yes, the Torah de Berea. It took on the Torah de Berea. This is also known as the Torah of the wilderness, the Torah that of remaking, the Torah that was given to the children of Israel after the sin of the golden calf. It is a physical Torah. And where is this one? Just as we said that the Torah de Kaduma, the Torah of the Atzilut, is associated in the realm of Atzilut, the spiritual realm, with the Sefira Hakma. Okay, so too does that Torah now descend the Sephirotic tree. The levels, it goes from one world, a higher world, Torah da, or excuse me, Alam da Atzilut to Alam da Berea, the universe of creation. And where does it go? It's associated with the sixth Sephira Teferet. Okay, and it's the written Torah. Okay, it too acquired the attributes, just as Adam and Eve did. It too acquired the attributes of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That is, of the conflict of the opposites. So just as the tree is comprised of good and evil, the Torah, the written Torah, is necessarily comprised of, meaning it contains, it's largely made up of, laws and regulations that consist of permissions and prohibitions. So if the tree of knowledge of good and evil is about good and evil, then the law that's given to us, the Torah, is changed and now is no longer spiritual but becomes a law consisting of permissions and prohibitions that define what we can do, what we can't do, what's pure, what is impure. It never used to be that way. It was purely a spiritual Torah d'atzilut. A Torah that was a Torah of pure relationship. Listen to my voice. What voice? The voice of God walking in the cool of the afternoon in the garden. That was the Torah. Okay, but no longer. Now it too has taken on material form. It's become a written Torah. And it reflects the tree of knowledge of good and evil, in that it sets forth all the permissions and prohibitions and defines what's pure and what's impure. All right. Also, the practices that are required are no longer spiritual. Listen for my voice and commune with me. I will speak with thee and thou with me. No longer is that the case. Now, the practices required in the physical Torah, the Torah de Berea, the Torah of the wilderness, Torah of remaking, these are all names for the same thing, are material and practical in nature. That is, man has to perform physical acts. He has to do certain things to keep him reminded, to keep his eye on the ball, to keep him reminded that there is a God. He has to put on tefillin. Another word for this is phylacteries. He has to put these little leather square boxes on at the center of his forehead, inside of which is a Torah passage. Okay? He has to put onto his arm, he has to wrap these leather straps in a certain precise exact way on his forearm. All of this is to remind him that he has a spiritual soul in him, and that soul is a child of God, and that God exists, and even if we don't see him with our physical eyes, that's all right, because he's there in the spiritual level. Okay? He has to wear tzitzits. These are any garment that's not round on the edges, that has like square, has corners, like a square garment that comes over your head with a hole through for your head, sort of like a poncho. Okay, that has square corners on the front and back. You have to wear, you're commanded if you're a Jew to wear fringes, little strings tied into mystical knots, knot patterns at each corner. Why? So that we may see the face of God. Okay? All of these things are practical acts that are required by a physical Torah that was not physical to begin with, but which became physical when Adam and Eve ate of the tree of knowledge of good and evil and fell from the world of Atzilut into the world of Malkut. All right. Now, so what I've tried to show you here is that the actions of man do indeed have an effect on the supernal world, and in this case, the actions of Adam and Eve lowered not just themselves into this world, but also caused the Torah to be lowered from the realm of Atzilut down into the world of Berea, and it made it into a material physical Torah, designed to put limits on our physical actions, designed to control the passions of the physical body. And for the last 3,000 to 3,500 years, since Mosaic Law came into effect, we have all been living under this Torah. Okay? So the first Torah was spiritual to match Adam and Eve's bodies. This was the spiritual Torah d'Atzilut when Adam fell and Eve with him. And then again, with the sin of the golden calf, the Torah took on a material form to match that of Adam and Eve and Israel. This is the Torah of the wilderness, the Torah de Berea, okay, under which we've been living for the last 3,500 years or so. Now, is that the way it's always going to be? No, because the Torah tells us that there will be two Messiahs who come, a Messiah from the house of Joseph and a Messiah from the house of David. The Christians say that the Messiah from the house of David has already come, and his name was Jesus, and the Jews the Beit Sanhedrin tried him, condemned him for sorcery. Well, they don't admit to this, but that's what happened. And the Romans crucified him and killed him. We as Jews do not agree at all with that. In any event, there will be a new Torah. The Messiah, Ben David, will bring a new Torah. And there's a prediction by Nathan of Gaza. Remember I spoke to you about Sabtai Zvi at the beginning of this teaching? Okay, Nathan of Gaza was his prophet. He's the man who revealed to a great Kabbalist, who revealed to Sabtai Zvi that he was indeed, in 1658, I believe, was the Messiah. And he has a prediction. He made a prediction that said, the Messiah will restore the crown to its pristine glory, but his contemporaries will rise against him and blaspheme. All right? And that's a prediction that came true with respect to Sabtai Zvi. He was recognized as the Messiah, as I said earlier, by the entire Klal Yisrael, the community of Israel, wherever it was in the world. And then on a certain day in 1666, I believe this was the year, don't fault me if I'm off a year, but I think it was 1666, he was called before the Sultan that was ruling the Ottoman Empire at the time in Constantinople. And he was asked to convert to Islam. And Sabtai Zvi looked at him, took off his headgear that was Jewish in nature. I don't know if it was a kippah, but he took off his Jewish headgear and he threw it on the floor and he put on the turban of a Muslim. And this was all that was required in those days to convert to Islam. And when word of this happened, it spread like wildfire. And the Jews were incredibly disturbed at this and distraught. And the critics and enemies of Sabtai Zvi, the rabbis, the rabbinic authorities, who had fought him all along in the first place, now saw their opportunity and they jumped onto him and literally tried to tear him apart, his reputation, and claimed that he was just an insane heretic and lots of other terrible things. And that was kind of the end of, or the high point, let's put it that way, the high point of the Sabbatean movement, but not the end of the movement. Now then, we will discuss in our next class about this restoration of the crown to its pristine glory, and what that has to do with the return or the institution of the new Torah. And so that concludes today's teaching. And don't forget to remember God at least twice today. Until we meet again, may you go from strength to strength. Sei gesund.